Welcome to the weekly podcast all about turning the great American RV adventure into stress-less camping. Each week, we explore tips, tricks, ideas, and destinations, and talk to the happiest campers in the RV world. Pull up a seat at the campfire as we enjoy some stress-less camping.
Welcome to the air conditioner.
Yeah, it's so weird. Last week we had the heater on, or last week we were sitting around the virtual campfire. This week, we don't want no stinking campfire.
It's not super hot, but it is muggy.
It's muggy, yeah. I'm Tony.
I'm Peggy.
And we are two sweaty RV industry veterans who travel part-time.
In a small trailer.
Looking to share big adventures and help you with great tips.
Tricks.
And discounts.
So we got to talk fast because I want to turn the air back on and I don't want the sound of it on the recording.
Well, we are coming to you from Livingston, Texas. We are having a great time here in the great state of Texas.
It's been fun.
At some barbecue. Oh my gosh. Boy, I think I went to one of my favorite barbecue places, but we'll get to that later. And our next stop, speaking of eating.
Yeah, and speaking of probably humidity, we're gonna go to Louisiana.
Yep.
And we're gonna stay in Eunice, Louisiana for about a week, but we're gonna go to two festivals.
Yeah.
There's actually a Boudin festival in the town of Scott.
And if you don't know what Boudin is, we'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Boudin is a Cajun, I guess, sausage that has rice as one of the ingredients.
Yeah.
And it's good.
And then actually in Eunice there will be another, it's called the Boot Brew Festival or something like that. It's a beer festival.
You said brew. You had me right? A brew.
So we'll do both of those things in the next week.
I really like going to these festivals. To me, it's a lot of fun. Trailer rallies, RV shows, music festivals, beer festivals, food festivals, Renaissance festivals.
All those things.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
You might remember that we talked to Jeff's Bar from Road Trip Mojo a little while ago, and that's why he travels. He travels for festivals, and we talked about finding those festivals out there. And
using Road Trip Mojo.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that's common with a lot of these festivals is you're camping off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want the music to stop or the party to end, one way to do so is with a great solar and lithium power system.
Yeah.
And the best company we know in terms of solar and lithium RV power is ABC Upfitters.
Right.
They use Mastervolt pieces, which come out of the marine industry. They're very high quality, very well designed. They actually have an engineer on staff. They will help you configure a system that's right for your camping and RVing style, whether that's just, hey, I want to drop a couple of batteries in, or I want to go completely Nutsomatic, which is what someone did last week. They shared a system that was just ooh la la. Off-grid office. And it had 920 amp hours of battery, two 3500 watt CombiMaster inverter systems, 1200 watts of solar on the roof, and a 60 amp solar charge controller.
Now, is it only an office or an RV with a great office?
It's an RV with a great office.
Okay.
But, you know, they can do those systems. They can do a simple drop-in battery replacement.
Yes.
And the good thing is they actually listen to what you want and will accommodate your preferences. So if you would like to have one of these great systems or just talk to somebody about all this, give them a call at 574-333-3225.
That's 574-333-3225.
Yep. Or find them with a link on the show notes at stresslesscamping.com, and you can see a video we did with them and all of that. So don't let the music stop.
Okay, well, I already said we're going to talk fast so we can turn the air conditioner on. But once I turn the air conditioner on, I can download Nick Russell's new book and start reading it.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We are so excited to bring you today's guest, Nick Russell. The reason that we haven't talked to him over the past few weeks is he was just finishing up the next book in his Big Lake series.
Yeah.
And we were just giving him some time to do that. He uploaded it yesterday. So if you are already a Nick Russell fan, there's a new book ready.
That's always a good time.
Yeah.
His books are outstanding. The bad thing is I read them in like a day or two, And then I'm like, oh, but he is such a prolific writer. Anyone who says, oh, Tony, you write a lot of stuff, man, I ain't got nothing on Nick Russell.
So we spoke to Nick Russell actually in episode 19, so a long, long time ago. And he told us about his fictional books, but also about his other books that are more RV related. And we just love his fiction as well as his other books, his RV related books, nonfiction books. He also wrote a blog post one time that really, really struck a chord with me. And we asked him to come on and talk about two lane highways, those kind of back roads of America that are far superior to the interstates for a lot of reasons. So let's hear from Nick about what those reasons might be. We're super excited to have back for the second time Nick Russell. Nick was one of our very first guests, and we talked to him about his books because as a full-time RVer, Nick, you wrote some RV books, and then you also write some mystery novels that we adore. So we want to thank you for coming back to talk to us. And tell us a little bit about your books first, and then we'll go on to some other topics.
Well, thank you for having me back. Yes, when we were on the road as full-time RVers, of course, you know, we published the Gypsy Journal RV newspaper for the 18 and a half years that we were on the road.
Yeah.
And then I wrote several books on RVing and travel. I wrote one called The Frugal RVer, one called Work Your Way Across the USA, another book called Meandering Down the Highway, which was about our first year as full-timers. And then I wrote two books, Highway History and Backroad Mystery, Volumes 1 and 2. And those were based on a lot of the things we found on those two-lane roads that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Little oddball stories that, you know, we know the history of something, but do we really know the history of it? And we tried to find those little things that most people drive right by and don't know about.
Right.
And then I morphed into doing mysteries. And yesterday my 55th book came out, and it's the 24th mystery in my Big Lake Small Town Mystery series.
Awesome.
It beats working for a living.
I have this aspiration to write a book, and I have half of it done as usual. It's half baked. And there you are with over 50.
You got to get busy.
I got to get off my duff.
Well, no, see, what you need is some butt glue.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
You get some butt glue and you glue your butt to a table and you start writing.
That's it.
Yeah, I guess that's one way to do it.
My first mystery, my first fiction book was Big Lake, the first book in that series. I actually wrote that book before we went on the road.
Oh.
I'd owned small town newspapers and I'd written, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff. But I had no faith in my ability to write fiction.
Uh-huh.
And I actually sat on that for 14 years.
Wow.
Terry read it, and a few friends of mine read it and said, oh, do something with it. That was before the days of self-publishing and ebooks and stuff. So, And they finally convinced me to just send it out to some of your blog subscribers and see what they think. And everybody seemed to think it was worth a shot. So I published it to Amazon, and it sold a few books. I released it in May of 2011. And sometime about September, some book review site reviewed it and said, this is the best first novel we've ever read with the ugliest cover we've ever seen. And this fellow wants to write books, he needs to get serious about covers. So I had someone make a nice cover for me. And that it came out in September with the new cover. No, October. It came out in October with the new cover. Sold about 1,000 books, which was astounding to me. November, it sold around 3,000 books. And Christmas Day, December of that year, it went crazy, and it sold a book a minute for 24 hours and made the New York Times bestseller.
Wow.
And the rest is history.
So it's all about the cover. Who knew?
The cover has a lot to do with it, and timing. That was also the year that everybody in the world got a Kindle. That was the hot gift that year.
Yeah, that helps.
And I was just at the right place at the right time. It's not that my book is any better than anybody else's out there, but
of course
I was
it
in
is.
The right place at the right time, and because I had a big blog following, that helped a lot too.
To me, one of the things I really love about your books is I have the ability to follow what's going on and the characters. And there's a lot of times I'll get partway through a book and I'm like, who was that again? And I just somehow your writing just works with my mind. And obviously I'm not the only one based on the number of books you're able to sell. I like that they're serious, there's a great plot, but there's also funny bits, and you really like the characters, and it's just I'd give you more than two thumbs up, but I only have these two.
I'll take them.
You can have my two.
Okay. So now you got four from us.
One of the biggest comments I get from readers is that they love the characters. And it's like somebody I know. This reminds me of my uncle or my cousin or my ignorant neighbor or, you know, right? Whatever it is.
And I think part of it is you describe the person well enough that the reader can get a picture of that person in their brain so that they can picture it. It helps. If there's no physical description of people, sometimes it is harder to remember which one was Bill and which one was Bob because you haven't got that mental picture of what each guy looks like.
Right. And as my list of books have grown, because I have three series out now and a few other ones too, but it's hard for me. I have to keep a list of who is who and which book, you know. This character belongs in this series, and I have actually a list of each one, kind of their traits and things about them that continues to grow as things change in their lives.
Right.
I met a guy at one of the FMCA conferences who was talking about writing and shared with me a tool that I've now since been using called Scrivener to help with that. And one of the things he advocated is you could build sort of a dossier on each person and then refer back to that.
Yes, I know a lot of authors that use it.
I know authors that don't do that because I've caught things like, wait, I thought that person was blonde and now you're talking about their auburn hair. What's going on here?
Those mistakes are easy to make sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 In one of my books, I have a restaurant. I can't remember which one it was now, but in the next book, it's different people own the same restaurant. They've owned it for, you know, it was passed down in the family, but it's a completely different family.
Oh, well. So I think you have three kind of series of mysteries. Our kind of first one, the first ones that we read, I think the first ones you started with were the Big Lake series, and they take place in Arizona, mm-hmm. where you've actually spent a good deal of time and where one of your travel guides is actually about.
Yes, Overlooked Arizona.
Yeah.
I actually forgot about those two books.
Yeah, that's why I was like, wait, did he say those?
Yeah, Overlooked Florida and Overlooked Arizona, yes.
But every time we take a trip that goes through Arizona, I want to go through that the area, the Big Lake area. I know it's a fictional town, but there's actually a lake, right. And the other cities that you talk about in the Big Lake series books. It's like we're always going through in December, and I think it's going to be too cold then. But I think actually this June, we're actually going to get to finally route ourselves through there.
We can go through Sholo. I've read about that a bunch of times.
Sholo was our hometown. My daughter still lives there, and I owned the weekly newspaper there for about 10 years.
Okay.
Huh.
So then you full-time RV'd for how many years?
About 18 and a half years.
18 and a half years. And one of the many wonderful things that came from that is a blog post that you wrote about traveling on two-lane highways and the greatness of those roads and getting off of the interstates and actually getting back and seeing the country instead of flying through it.
Well, as I always tell people, an interstate exit looks the same no matter what interstate you're on. You know?
Yeah.
Denny is going to be the same. Flying J is going to be the same. Everything you see is going to be the same. But it's those two-lane roads where you really get to know small-town America. You know, you get to get off and you stop in a diner and, you know, the waitress calls you honey and slaps you on the shoulder. She walks by and by the time you get done having lunch, you know who got their truck repossessed and you know, yeah. who got a new job and whose kid went off to college. You know, so we just love those two-lane roads. And sometimes they're a bit of an effort to travel in a motorhome, you know, through them, but mm-hmm. It's worth the trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that I think we took from you when we first started this adventure. And it has just played out well. I mean, last year we went all of Route 66.
No, that was actually...
Was it 2 years
ago? It was almost 3 years ago.
Oh, dear.
Now. Yeah.
Okay. Almost. Yeah.
It was in 2021. That was our first really big get on the road and go somewhere kind of a trip. And we went from Northern California down to Santa Monica and started and then drove all of Route 66 to Chicago.
I guess we did it backwards.
We did it backwards.
I think that's a big trip for a lot of people. I've spent a lot of time in 66. When I was a kid, my dad was a border patrolman.
Oh, okay.
And our family was in Ohio, but we were down on the southwest border. So we would take 66 back across the country, you know, to go home and visit quite a bit. I remember the old wigwam hotels and the little tourist traps along the way and things like that.
The thing that impressed me, because we tried to stay on as much of 66 itself as possible, is, as you said, the two-lane roads, that's where the unique food is and just the cool things to see. And what impressed me about 66 is there is still enough of it left to remain interesting, but there's a lot of new stuff that's like a tribute.
Kind of a revitalization.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people are trying to turn modern things into more Route 66-ish things.
Kind of a retro look to them.
Yeah.
I think the movie Cars helped with that a lot.
Yeah.
I think so, yes. One of the things about, you know, 66, it's sad that so much of it's been gobbled up by Interstate Highway.
Mm-hmm.
There are still enough portions, if you take your time and study ahead of time, that you can get off and experience some of the real part of it. You know, the longest continuous stretch of 66 is between Williams, Arizona and Kingman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a great road to get on and follow that, you know, up through there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that. We actually, that was one of our first Harvest Host stops, was at the Keepers of the Wild.
Yeah, that's right.
On Route 66.
And that's like an animal sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to spend the night,
yes,
listening to lions roar.
Don't go walking in your sleep.
No.
Right. Then you are dinner.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I always tell people when you're doing these roads like that, do that. Stop in the little restaurants. You know, experience some of the local food. A Grand Slam and Denny's is the same no matter where you're at.
Yeah, and nothing special.
Go to that little mom and pop diner. Someone always told me that when I was a kid that you always go where the truck drivers go. And
right.
That's the best place with the best place to park. But yeah, we love it. Don't be afraid to talk to the people. You know,
yeah.
We learned so many things about the local area just by talking to the, hey, we're just passing through. What's there to see around here?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things we never knew existed until something like that.
Right. We noticed that like every town you pass through, there's a Route 66 museum. And we thought, well, we can't do them all. I wish we would have kind of just taken, you know, we were, unfortunately, even though we were trying to slow down on the back road, we were still rushing to get somewhere all the time.
Right.
We didn't go to very many museums because there were just so many, but we stopped at a little town in Oklahoma and had those sandwich with the pork loin or whatever.
That's right.
That was like bigger than the plate on
pork tenderloins.
Yeah, pork tenderloin, yes. On a regular bun, but the pork tenderloin would have filled four buns.
Terry's making that for dinner tonight.
All right.
they said about the museum that was there.
Yeah, the people said, oh, this is like the best museum. And so we turned around and went back to that museum, and it really was a great museum. And I wish I could think of, we'll put a link in the show notes because I know we talked about it, but I can't think of the name of the town right now.
I also like that one in Kingman, the old powerhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another good.
That's a great one.
Yeah. And you had mentioned some other neat two-lane roads. There was one there that really floats my boat, but we haven't been on the Natchez Trace Parkway.
No, we haven't.
That's a trip you have to take. That you absolutely have to do that one. I started in Natchez, Mississippi. It's two-lane road all the way. There's no commercial traffic, so there are no 18-wheelers, you know, on your bumper. Lots of places to pull out and just take your time and do it. It's, I think, 400 and some miles goes up into near Nashville.
Wow.
And it's just an amazing trip, an amazing trip.
That sounds good. And
yeah, we got off, you know, we stopped in Tupelo, saw Elvis's birthplace and that sort of thing. Meriwether Lewis Memorial, there's where he died, and things like that. So it's well worth the trip. And it's just such a laid back trip. You don't feel like you have to hurry at all. I think the speed limit's 55 miles an hour. Enjoy it.
That's our that kind of great place.
Yeah.
And then one you mentioned that I have been on many a times, and I couldn't agree with you more. Highway 101 in California. Oh, it's just.
Oh, yes. California and then up into the Oregon and Washington area is absolutely beautiful on Highway 101. That every along the Oregon coast, I always tell people every turn is a magnificent vista of oceans and mountains.
And one of the amazing things about that is the people are, it's a whole different, it's almost a stereotype of the hippies and stuff in certain sections of 101.
Yes, it is, in California especially. There's a place, and I would have to look it up to tell you, I'm sorry, I can't think of it now, but it's in California, not far south of the Oregon border, where a man has a old lumber mill type building that he's brought back to life, and they bring in young people, and they teach them to build furniture, and they teach them the old-time crafts done the old way. And we spent a day there, and just absolutely fabulous.
Oh, man, that's something that I haven't seen that, but I'd love to see that.
That sounds great. We'll have to look that up. We actually have some friends that live in Newport on the coast, kind of mid Oregon coast.
I absolutely love Newport.
The last time we went up there was, that's what we did, was just follow the coast from where we lived in Northern California up to Newport. But that's only half the trip. We got to get back on and finish our way up into Washington.
I've been every inch of it many times. I actually got my start in the small town newspaper business in Grays Harbor, Washington, which is on the coast there, and absolutely love that area. There's so much to see and do, and it's still, when you get on the Olympic Peninsula, it's still so unspoiled.
And such a different coastline from like Northern California to Southern California.
Oh gosh, yeah.
I mean, just night and day.
Yeah, once you get into the northern part, it's just, the stress just melts away from you.
Right.
There's not as much traffic. There's not as much hustle.
Yeah, because there's a whole lot fewer people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not so much traffic, not so many people. And it's just such beauty, such gorgeous views, like you said.
You mentioned Newport, and that's one of our favorite towns. Like, I could absolutely, you know, live there. We really love it. And, of course, the aquarium there and those things are just fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Sea Lion Caves south of there, if you've ever been to them there.
I went with my grandparents in 1979. And as I have to say every time I talk about going somewhere, we didn't have time to stop the last time we were up that way. But it's one of my hopeful plans for next year.
Newport, Florence, all through there. Coos Bay. Of course, Florence is famous for the exploding whale. I'm sure you know that story.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I remember somewhere reading an interview with that guy who said, I hope I don't go to my grave being known for this. Oh, too late.
Yes, that story is just famous up there. They actually have a whale park now in memoriam of it, type thing. But that whole area, Tillamook, you know, if you get up to Tillamook, the Tillamook Cheese Factory is fabulous, and they have room for RV parking and things like that.
Huh.
If you belong to the Elks Lodge in Florence and the Elks Lodge in Newport and some of the others have RV parking there too and hookups so you can use.
Huh.
I used to love to camp at the one in Newport because it's just a 3 or 4 blocks from the waterfront and you wake up to the sound of all the sea lions.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great.
And, of course, in the lighthouses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The lighthouses are incredible. I mean, you could do a tour up the either coast and even – you know, other places where there's a lot of water. Like I was surprised at the ones on the Great Lakes, but
yeah,
all up and down California, those lighthouses are just, I just love them.
Yeah.
I did a story once on the Lake Michigan Circle Tour about all the lighthouses just on Lake Michigan itself.
Oh, okay.
I read somewhere there are more lighthouses on the Great Lakes than there are on the Atlantic and Pacific coast together.
Wow.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. A lot of rugged coast, not rugged, but
yeah.
A lot of convoluted coastline and such. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't want ships running into bridges or anything like that.
No, you wouldn't want that.
So you had also mentioned one that I had never heard of, the Lolo Pass Trail.
One of our favorites, yes. When we were teaching at Life on Wheels, it was in Moscow, Idaho for a long time, and folks aren't familiar with it. It's no longer operating. The man who started it died, but it was a week-long course in RVing, and we were instructors for that. And when we would go there, we would usually, coming from the east, we would take Highway 12, starting in Missoula, Montana, and follow that all the way across. And it's just beautiful. As you're going along, there's the, I believe it's the Clearwater River. Yeah, is on your side. And just, again, every turn is something different. We saw elk and moose and deer and bear and you name it, they're out there.
Have you found that any RV can mostly traverse these, or would you advise maybe something smaller? Or
most of those, you know, we had a 40-foot diesel pusher for either an MCI bus conversion or a Winnebago diesel pusher. But no, most of those you can do in a 40-foot RV with no problems. There are going to be some places that you can't get into, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the highways themselves, you know, most of them are U.S. highways, which they're made for 18-wheelers. So that's not a problem. Now, I will say this. If I'm going someplace on a U.S. highway and I come to a major city, I will get off the two lane and get on some kind of a loop road and go around it, you know, on the interstate or something.
Yes.
Because I don't want to drive an RV through Dallas or Fort Worth.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, we did that on Monday, actually. Mistake, I mean, not Monday, Thursday, but yeah.
Yeah, that's no fun. Any big city is always no fun. to go through. And you always end up, you think, oh, I'm going to go through here at like 1 o'clock, and then it's five and you're like, doggone it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've done that more than once and never again. Something else that we did a lot when we were traveling these two lane roads, I'd always stop in the little small town chambers of commerce or someplace, you know, what is there to see around here? Because there are so many things you never heard of. I always called it putting a pin in a map. We would put in fact, I did seminars on this. We would put a pin on the little town. So say Sholo, Arizona. And then I would do a circle 25 miles in every direction. What is there to see?
Mm-hmm.
And then 30 miles in every direction and 40 miles. It's amazing how many things there are to see and how many little bits of trivia you can pick up. That, you know, Sholo, Arizona is a good example. We lived there for many years. Why is it called Sholo? S-H-O-W-L-O-W. It was named by the turn of a card. Two old pioneers that settled in the area. They started a ranch together, and as time went on, it started to get bigger and bigger and more successful, but they weren't getting along very well.
Huh.
So they decided they were just going to play a game of cards, and whoever wins owns the place.
Wow.
And they were drawing cards, and one of them said to the other, show low and you win. And he picked the deuce of clubs, and that was a low card, and he won the ranch.
Wow.
And now the main street is called Deuce of Clubs Boulevard.
Huh. So
just one of those little oddball stories, and you find those everywhere you go.
And that kind of trivia is just so neat, you know, to look into and to learn about. And that's what makes travel special. That kind of uncovering the magic of any specific area is what I dig anyway. Yeah.
We met someone one time where we were full-time, we were at Livingston, Texas, and met someone, and someone was talking about Alaska at the social hour. And he said, that's a wasted trip. He said, I went up there and back. He said, we left June 1st and we were back July 4th and blew six tires on the trip and never saw anything.
Huh.
Well, no, you didn't.
No. Yeah.
I could take a whole summer just to do Route 66.
Right.
Or 101 or any of those roads.
Yeah, absolutely.
Slow down and take your time there. Those, like you say, those little oddball stories. That's what my two books, Highway History and Backroad Mystery volumes, are those little stories we found in some little town.
We got to study up on those before we start rounding ourselves on these two-lane highways.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We stopped in some little town in Missouri. The name escapes me right now, but toured Daniel Boone's homestead.
Huh.
We always think of Daniel Boone as being in Kentucky.
Yeah.
But the reality is Kentucky got too crowded for Daniel Boone. He was a pioneer. You know, his idea is build a cabin and this is my land. Well, along came lawyers and civilization, and pretty soon he was mired in lawsuits because people stake claims to land. He didn't bother with those kind of things. And he actually left Kentucky and said, damn you, Kentucky, I never want to see you again.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Missouri, and he lived out the rest of his life there.
Huh.
Well, when he died, this is kind of takes a minute to tell the story, but it's really worth hearing. They were getting up there in years, and Rebecca, his wife, those were the days you couldn't run down the store and buy something. So he made two coffins, one for his wife and one for himself, and they stored them under their bed. They were practical people, and they used them for linen storage. Well, they went to see their daughter, who was 13 miles away. And in those days, 13 miles was quite a trip, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And Rebecca Boone died while they were there.
Oh, boy.
So Daniel went home, got her coffin, brought it back, and they buried her. Went by a few more years later, he died. Well, when they opened the grave, this is according to the story from the local people, when they opened the grave next to hers, they found a skeleton in it, which was probably a slave.
Hmm.
So then they buried him at the foot of her grave, and they had a monument that said Daniel and Rebecca Boone.
Huh.
They wanted to bring Daniel Boone to Frankfort, the capital of Kentucky, and they created a tomb for him there. And they actually went to court over it, and Frankfort got Kentucky got the rights to dig him up. They opened the grave next to Rebecca's, and they found some bones, and they took him to Frankfort and interred him there.
Wow.
There's a beautiful monument in Frankfort, Kentucky, to Daniel Boone, but the people in Missouri say he's buried here. And they actually, it came up at one time when someone was touring the Missouri home, he was a Kentucky colonel and a state senator from Kentucky, and he said, no, Daniel's in Frankfort. And they said, no, he's not. And they actually did DNA on the bones and found that they were an African-American of about 5 foot, 10 inches tall.
Huh.
Daniel Boone was obviously white and a fairly short man.
Huh.
And but Kentucky still says we have him, and Missouri still has him. Those are the little stories that I would have never known that except getting in some little small town and talking to people.
That's so cool. Yeah, exactly.
A couple of other great roads, too, I might want to suggest to you, and you may have been on some of those, is US 60, which we've followed from coast to coast. all through Arizona, goes right through Sholo, as a matter of fact. And whenever we were going west, that was our chosen route because it's pretty much into Texas all the way as just two-lane road. Then you get into a couple of big cities, you have to go around it. But that's another great road and lots of places to pull out. You go through Fort Sumner, New Mexico, where Billy the Kid was killed and things like that.
Yep.
We actually have been
that's
there.
That's another great one. And the Lincoln Highway. You just can't beat the Lincoln Highway. You know, that was America's first transcontinental road from New York to San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's where you make that turn, and there's a big building, and it has the Lincoln Memorial Highway painted on it. You know that sign?
Yes. Yes.
That's always a big landmark to me. Mm-hmm. It is a big landmark. It's painted on the
side of the building. Yeah. There's a lot of places in the Midwest. They call them the flyover states because people just fly over them or fly through them.
Yeah.
And there's so much to see in those places.
Yeah.
Those little small towns, Winterset, Iowa, and the home of John Wayne and those kind of things. Just, you know, where the Madison County, where the bridges were, bridges of Madison County were done. There's so much of that kind of thing to see, but you'll never see it on the interstate.
We went to the Mana colonies not long ago, and we liked it so much, we're going back.
Iowa. Yeah.
Wonderful place.
Mm-hmm. You're right. I mean, the Midwest has always, you know, I've always heard, oh, there's nothing to see there. And the more places I see, the more there is to see.
Right.
If that makes any sense. Exactly. You know, you're like, oh, this is, you know, I like this state or that state a lot more than I thought I would. Or you know, I've seen it. That was plenty.
Right. Yeah, I mentioned the man who went to Alaska and back in a month, and someone else said that they stopped full timing after a year because they'd seen everything there was to see.
In a year?
I couldn't see all of New Jersey in a year. Yeah, in a year's time, they'd seen everything there was to see. They were done.
I bet you can't say that after 18 and a half years.
No, exactly. There was so much. Even now, there are things that we didn't get to see or want to go back and see again. You know, going up to Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and camping at the Elks Lodge there right on the peninsula and watching the ship. Go through the locks.
Nice.
You know, the Sioux locks, things like that. Boston and the Freedom Trail, even though we're talking about two-lane roads, every place has so much to see and do if you just take the time to do it.
Yeah. That's probably some of the best advice I can give anybody.
Yeah.
Is, you know, some people just have to tick off certain national parks or whatever it happens to be. And really within 100 miles, 200 miles of your home, wherever that happens to be, there may be a lot to do.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts that you have to share with our audience? I think you've got some great tips here.
One thing that all new RVers do, in the first year, you're going to run the wheels off the rig.
Yeah.
You want to see everything in a year. You know? And you've got all the family all over the country. You've got to go see them. And I understand that. I always tell people, don't base, especially full-timing RVing, on the first year or even the first 2 years.
Yeah.
Because it takes about that long. And that wears you out. And it costs a lot of money, too. You know, we got to the point where we would go someplace and stop, and we might stay overnight, but we might stay for a month. There are many times we went into some little town someplace and said, well, we're just going to stop for the night, and found out that there's so much to see and do that we were there for a week or two. And a lot of the small towns also have, you know, free campgrounds or little small campgrounds, you know, that you can stop. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to go to a big commercial campground there.
Right.
You know, we did a couple of books on free campgrounds and fairgrounds camping and things. There's a lot of those kind of opportunities out there that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing, they're still there. There's a lot of people who say, oh, it's, you know, camping is full. And we don't find that, but we're not staying at the brand resorts either. That's not our style.
Right.
Right. Yeah, we had a book, I'm sure it's out of date now, a booklet we published. You may have it or not, I'll send you a copy, but it's over 1,000 free campgrounds and overnight parking spots.
Mm.
And some of them were just a wide spot in the road, but a lot of them were small town parks with full hookups.
Yeah.
You know, they're in Levelland and Littlefield, Texas, which are about, I think, 20 miles apart. Both have a city campground. I think back then one was $10 a night, the other was free. But we spent probably 3 weeks between those two towns. Just you could stay one for a week, then the other one for a week, because there was so much to see and do in that area of Texas. There's all through Texas, all through the country. The Midwest is full of little towns that have a little free campground, or it's $10 a night, or whatever it is.
Right.
And well worth it. And then I tell people, go spend some money in town. You know, go that 30 or 40 or 50 bucks or whatever it is these days for a campground, go spend that having dinner in town. You know, talk to some of the people, just wander around, and you'll be surprised how alike we really are for all the differences in our country.
Yes.
How alike we really are. When you forget the politics and all the things that is on the nightly news, and you just talk to people,
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, we one example, I'll tell you another one. We were on a little two-lane road, and we weren't in our RV at the time. We had gone someplace, but we wanted to get into kayaking. And we were someplace, in southern Indiana, and I won't even swear to that. But I'd found a place that sold kayaks and you could rent kayaks to take them down this river and things. We knew we were near the place, but we weren't sure where. And we were just in our truck. Our RV was in a campground 50 miles away. But we couldn't find this place, so we stopped in this little store, like a convenience store, not a name brand store, just a little mom-and-pop convenience store. And I said, I'm trying to find such and such. And the man behind the counter, there was a couple of young girls, teenage girls here, and the fellow behind the counter said, well, you go down past the Jones place, and you turn left. I said, oh, I don't know where the Jones place is. So you know where the cemetery is? I said, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. You aren't from around here, are you? No. He said, all right, girls, watch the store. Follow me. And he jumps in his car and takes us down a series of roads to where we needed to be. You know, you're not going to find that in Philadelphia or Toledo or any place else.
Yeah.
No, that's small town USA, and that's what makes this such a great country.
Yeah.
Is that kind of experience. It is.
Border to border and coast to coast, there's just so much to see anywhere you go. I cannot believe the places we never got to. It's like, how did we miss that?
Yeah.
You know, in places we never knew about. And someone says, gee, did you ever go there? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No matter what you're into, if you're into quilting, Paducah, Kentucky has a great quilt museum. There's another one in Tillamook, Oregon. If you're into lighthouses, obviously there's lighthouses everywhere. These places are all over, no matter what your interests are. If it's airplanes, there are so many old airplane museums. No matter what you like to do, no matter what piques your interest, you can find it on those two-lane roads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the other thing is, maybe you'll find something you never thought you'd enjoy.
Right.
You know, you might say, I don't have any interest in that. I mean, my wife loves textiles and fabrics, and she's a weaver and all these things. And we went to a couple of quilt museums because she wanted to see them. And like, this is fascinating. You know, this is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
Or get up to the Amish country. And the Amish are so different, but yet so much like us.
Yeah.
Respect their religion. You know, don't poke a camera in their face and things.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks the Amish are just in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. No, they're Amish in Indiana, Wisconsin, and a lot of
people. Oh, no, we go to Elkhart a lot. And one of our favorite things is the Amish things there, like the Amish donut.
The Amish bakery that they call.
Yeah, they call
the
it
Amish
crack
donuts.
Because they're so good.
In Shipshewana area, yeah. two other things there's a book about a lot of these two-lane roads we're talking about, and I'll have to find it and I'll email it to you.
Okay.
And also there's a great book called Road Food.
Road Food. I'm in.
They travel the country finding oddball restaurants.
Oh.
And some of those are just fantastic. You know, we found one in that book for a place in Rockport, Texas called The Boiling Pot.
Hmm.
And you go in and it's boiled shrimp and crawfish and stuff. And they come out there, they put a big piece of butcher paper on the table and they just pour it out
on
the table and you just eat it, that sort of thing. There was a place we found in Alabama, and I want to say it's called The Brick Pit, but I'm not sure about that, from the same book. But it's an old ranch-style house,
mm-hmm.
and you pull around, and they cook it out back, and you go inside, and the walls are just covered with paper where people have signed their names and stuff, and some of the greatest barbecue you'll ever have in your life. And
wow.
It's funny. You go to the bathrooms. There's a men's room and a women's room, but it's a house. It used to be a house.
Yeah.
And you go in the men's room, there's a toilet stool, and then a shower stall that says urinal, and it says, go ahead. Everybody else does. Get into those places and eat that local food, and some of it's going to be the best you'll ever have.
Uh-huh.
The amount of great food around is another thing, and different. I mean, I had never heard of Boudin until last year. Now we're going to a Boudin festival.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, things like barbecue is so different from Texas to Memphis, let's say,
mm-hmm.
or here in Alabama.
Yeah.
Where we are now. And everybody knows they have the best barbecue. So it's cold boy sandwiches down. People will fight you over that. They'll tell you which one's best.
Oh, yeah.
Right, of course.
People are very passionate about what they like best.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. Barbecue is one of our favorite foods, and we've been to a lot of different places. And we were someplace, it was a place in Arizona, and the waitress is walking around in house slippers and house coat. She just walks down and flops some silverware on the table. And I said, I'll have a Coke. And she said, well, we're out of Coke with diet. I said, well, she said, no, you need a dinner. You're fat. She wasn't being rude. It was just that. You know, there you go. But those kind of places you just can't find everywhere. You
mm-hmm.
know? And they've got a personality all their own. So
yeah.
Yeah.
We were on a couple of two-lane roads. We were one someplace and older lady drove around and stopped and looked at our RV. I forget where we were parked now. And she got out and she kind of looked at it. She drove away. And very soon she came back. And I say older lady because we started full time when we were in our 40s. So she was probably my age now, 70. And she came back. She looked at us again. Terry said, she must want something. So I was like, can I help you, ma'am? And she said, I've always seen these things and I've always wanted to wonder what they look like inside.
Oh. Huh.
So come on in. I'll show you. So we took her inside and she was amazed that our RV had a washer and dryer, two televisions. She was just amazed at that, a bathroom. And she just, all of this. She got ready to leave and she was spent probably half an hour with us. And she got ready to leave. She said, can I ask you a personal question? I said, sure. She goes, where does the poop go?
Oh.
When you flush the toilet, does this fall out in the street? So then I had to show her the whole sewer bay. And she
nice.
Found that fascinating. Those kind of experiences just live with you a long time.
Right.
That's awesome. But you're right. That's what makes travel magic.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the little postcards or the little decals you put on your refrigerator, the little magnets or whatever. It's just getting out there and seeing those things because they can take your house. They can take your car. You know, a fire could wipe all that out tomorrow. But those memories that you have, those experiences mm-hmm. are going to be with you forever.
Yep. Yes. That's what life is, a great collection of awesome experiences.
We've been off the road for 7 years now, and sometimes Terry and I say, gee, do you remember we did that? And we start talking about whatever it was, you know, something that happened. And sometimes those things, you know, I won't lie to you, there are things happen on two-lane roads that get kind of scary sometimes. You go, oh, my God, I can't get under this bridge or whatever it is. But they become adventures down the road. There are things you talk about down the road, but we'll say, yeah, you know, we were just talking last at some place we had dinner. And she said, where was that? I think it was so such and such place, Florida. No, I think it was in Alabama. And we just, you know, some little restaurant that something happened. You know?
Yeah.
So my advice to your listeners and to you is, you know, every day is an adventure and forget the highways. I mean, sometimes you've got to get where you need to be. We were vendors at a lot of RV rallies. We had to do the interstate sometimes.
Sure.
It's the only way to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And I'm sure in your business too. But whenever you have the time, you know, get on those two-lane roads and just don't ever get above 50 miles an hour if you can help it.
Right.
You just drive along. If there's no traffic behind you, slow down to 35. You've got to get your home. You don't have any place. You're already home.
Yeah.
Take the time and, you know, get to see it. And pull into a little wide spot in the road and just have a sandwich and look around you, you know. And you'll be surprised at things you're going to find and things you're going to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, and plus you'll get better gas mileage too.
Right.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, we've been places where – in some little city campground or wherever, where someone comes along and they bring us, here's 4 ears of corn. We just picked corn this morning, or, you know, a basket of strawberries or something like that. You know, just amazing things like that. There's local people. And, you know, they want to talk to you just as much as you want to talk to them. We talked to a lady one time in West Virginia someplace at a little country store. She had been born upstairs from that store. Her family's home and business.
Wow.
She was in her 40s, and she had never been more than 15 miles from that spot.
Wow.
And she couldn't believe that we'd been over there. Why would you want to go all those places? This is where I'm from. Why would I want to go anyplace else?
Huh.
And in one way, that's kind of fascinating, but it's also kind of sad. Yeah. Someone she's missing out on.
I think there's some study that a lot of people never venture more than like 100 miles from wherever they call home.
Yes. I believe that's true.
To each their own. I like our way better.
I do too.
Well, Nick, thank you again for your time and your fantastic books. We really appreciate you quite a bit.
Indeed.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you guys too and look forward to talking again sometime.
You
Absolutely.
Bet.
Absolutely.
Anytime. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet.
Love to Terry.
Safe travels to you.
You
thank
too.
You.
Thanks, Nick.
Bye.
I sure do love talking to Nick.
I know.
That was so great.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to use our RV Trip Wizard, which is part of the RV Life Suite, and I am going to make a whole trip plan called Nick's Trips in my mind, and I'm just going to put all these two-lane highways that he talked about onto a Trip Wizard planner so that when we're going somewhere, we can remember, like, oh, well, hey, as long as we're going through this area, we might as well get on that road and check it out.
One of the things that is a real highlight feature of theirs is that it does RV safe navigation. So you put in the size of your rig and it won't let you plan trips that might put you in peril.
Right.
There are campground reviews and gas stops. There's so much that you can do with that. we have a link to get a discount, and we have a 1 month free trial.
That's right.
At our home on the web at stresslesscamping.com. So if you've been looking for a great way to plan your routes, not the ones that you have to die periodically, but your journeys. Nothing. RV Trip Wizard is a great tool.
We have been having some fun adventures this past couple weeks.
Yes, we have.
We spent last week at Clear Lake Park. I think it was a state park, and it was on Lavon Lake.
I thought it was Army Corps.
You're right. You keep reminding me that. I think it is an Army Corps park. And we stayed there because it's in the vicinity of a couple of people that we know from our past lives. Even one person they were guests of ours at the bed and breakfast.
Who took us to a barbecue place.
Yeah, but we've stayed in touch with them for like 15 years or whatever
it is.
Isn't
that crazy?
And they actually had us meet them, and they bought our lunch, which was super nice, at the Hard Eight Barbecue. And the way that's in the Colonies, which is right out, you know, a suburb of Dallas. The place got its name because the guy was in Vegas or wherever he was gambling, playing craps, and he got a Hard Eight. That was the seed money for the barbecue joint.
That's the urban legend. This place is truly legit. I mean, they smoke all their own meats. You walk in past all these pit smokers.
Yeah.
And I mean, that alone, just as you pull up, you smell it. And then you walk in and you just buy the meat by the pound. So you could get, like, I got three ribs, think a half pound of brisket, some bacon wrapped shrimp.
Just say, you know, slice me off some, and they slice off, you know, a serving.
Yeah.
And if you want two servings, just tell them to put more on the plate.
Yeah. Or you just take a bunch home, whatever it is. So there's this whole tray and it's all this different barbecue. And so you get that, they weigh it, and then you go and there's these sides and desserts and, you know, all the other stuff too.
But then what the great thing is, if you dine there and not take it out, there's like a pot of beans, and you can eat all the beans you want while you have your barbecue.
Yeah, and they also have two kinds of barbecue sauce in heated dishes, whatever.
And probably Tony drank a gallon of sweet tea.
Oh, easily. You know what? If I lived in the South, I would weigh twice as much as I do.
That's not good.
Because I love sweet tea. Oh my gosh, that is my Achilles heel. I love sweet tea.
So what we did, we'll tell on ourselves, we ate lunch at the Hard Eight Barbecue. And then we went to another place we'll talk about in a second. And then we went back and had dinner at the Hard Eight Barbecue.
Yeah. Well, it was that good. I mean, and we weren't that far away still.
Right. So in between lunch and dinner, we went to Traintopia.
Traintopia was a G scale. And now, you know, if you like model trains, and I think you all know I am a huge train nut, G scale is the larger size of model trains for the most part. Steve Sanders built this spectacular G-scale layout, and it was sort of a tribute to places that he either had been or really liked in his life. Like, one was old-time downtown Dallas.
Right, so it was like from the time when he grew up, 50s and 60s, and there was a scene from mountains in Colorado.
Yeah, and New Mexico
and Arizona scenes, but he didn't just take some random layout and fake it to look like a scene in Colorado. He had pictures of the scene he wanted, and he had the mountain built. He had the trees built so that they were the right species of pine tree are on that mountain scene.
It's amazing.
Really, really accurate and spectacular.
And it's this giant room full of these incredible displays. And then they run the trains. The trains are all run by computer. They have a drive-in movie theater.
Yeah.
Not for you, but for, you know, to scale that shows movies.
But it does have a little projector in the movie house, and they show movies on it.
Yeah, and there's all these funny things. But one of the things that Peggy and I really like, there's a scavenger hunt. They have four different scavenger hunts.
And it was fun.
It really opens your eyes to some of the intricate details of this Traintopia.
Yeah.
I mean, the level of detail, I saw a Corvair too.
Ooh.
But the level of detail on this thing is incredible. And I do have a video which we will put a link to in the show notes, gives you a little taste. But if you're ever in Frisco, Texas, which is where this is, don't miss it. It was great. Now, they also have full-size real trains, and they have a huge collection, but
they do tours like two mornings a week, and that was not the day we were there.
Yeah, not the day we were there, but that's okay. Just the model trains alone was plenty for me. I was very pleased with it.
Another place that we ate was called The Yard, and that was in McKinney, Texas. And what a cute, cute little town that is.
Yeah.
I would have liked to be there. Maybe we were there on like a Tuesday night and it was pretty quiet.
Yeah.
But I can imagine during the summer or on a weekend how that place must just be hopping with all the restaurants and stores and bars. And actually, this is going to stick with me for a long time. I have read a book recently where this fabric artist moves into this town and starts making these like tree scarves. And I was trying to imagine what they would look like. Well, McKinney, Texas has them all over their trees. And they're not just a scarf wrapped around. They're actually like knit sweaters.
Yeah, the trees kind of have sweaters.
For trees. They're so cool.
And this is like one of those old late 1800s. It's like a town you'd find that Andy Griffith would live in.
Yeah.
And it's just been kind of brought back to life, and there's all these restaurants and stores and all of that. They put lights across the street. It's really nice. I really like McKinney.
Yeah, so Joe was saying it wasn't that long ago that it was just almost kind of a ghost town. There was just nothing to it, and it's just really revitalized, and it looks like, I mean, it was a great place to visit even, you know, when it was really quiet, because then we got to walk around and do what we wanted. We had some gelato after we had our barbecue.
And gelato.
We had a really nice time, and it's probably a place I could spend a few afternoons or evenings hanging out. Yeah,
without a doubt. Now, the place we stayed, Clear Lake Park, was on Lake Levan. It was not really that close, nor that far from either of these places that we mentioned.
Right.
But it's kind of out on a peninsula, and it's an Army Corps of Engineers park. There's a graveyard in the RV park.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you can walk around and there's a whole bunch of headstones.
And somehow I managed to pick the campsite that was closest to that graveyard. I think because I was looking for the northern exposure for Starlink.
Perhaps.
And it looked like the best one. But now that we know, if we went back, there were some sites that are right on the edge of the lake and they would have fantastic views, although we don't have a back window. So
no.
It was really, really nice. There were some, a couple of the sites, including ours, it's gravel road, but then blacktop campsites.
The blacktop was,
you know how mud can get those divots from car tires and stuff?
The blacktop was in terrible shape. It was all crumbling.
The blacktop had melted around the tires of a vehicle that was sitting there. Like ruts, like big ruts, but they were bigger because they were chunked up blacktop instead of mud.
Yeah, as I was back in the trailer into the site, I was actually concerned about scraping the bottom.
Yeah.
It was that high.
Yeah.
So the sites, like the electric, they were full hookups and we paid, what, $30 a night?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the value was there. There was a really nice shelter that you could go under. Really, some of the better barbecues I've seen at campsites and fire pits too, and picnic tables. So there was a lot going for it, but boy, that blacktop was rough.
Yeah.
But full hookups for $30, so it was fine. Yeah.
And we never really did go and try to look for it. Well, because I found out that it wasn't going to be open when we were there. There is a wildlife sanctuary nearby.
Oh, yeah.
And when we checked in, they said, if you listen like 7:30 in the evening and 7:30 in the morning, you'll hear all the big cats growling for their dinner. I think it's just a big cat sanctuary. It's, you know, like Keepers of the Wild, where we've been before, has a lot of different animals, but this one just has cats.
Not like house cats, by the way, but like
big cats,
the kind of cats that eat you.
Tigers and lions.
Oh my.
Oh my. If we go back to that area, I think I would like to try and schedule a tour.
Oh, without a doubt.
Especially a feeding time tour. Those are always the best. I think those are only on Saturday, those tours.
Yeah. Since we're in Texas, well, you know, there's either beans or no beans in chili, but we have a recipe that was shared with us that is beans.
It's just a beans. Yeah, it's not a chili recipe. It's called calico beans. And that recipe was shared with us from Marilyn Owen, who was at our quartzite meetup and shared some great potluck deals. And we didn't actually get to eat these, but this is a recipe I think I could put together and love very much. It is Maryland's calico beans, and that is our recipe for this week. It's on the website. We'll put a link. It is essentially three kinds of beans with bacon and ground beef, and then sauce, because everything needs sauce, yep. Right? And that's a combination of ketchup and brown sugar and mustard. So you get that sweet and that tangy and that all those right flavors that you need for a bean dish such as this.
Well, I like this recipe because number one thing, a pound of bacon.
Right?
I mean, how can you go wrong?
So this would be a great thing to put in a Dutch oven even and put over coals.
Yeah.
You could put it in pretty much any baking dish and put it in the RV oven. Cast iron, of course, would be fantastic. A tip that Marilyn and I talked about was if you want to make these during a camping trip, maybe you fry the bacon and maybe you even fry the ground beef and onion ahead of time. And that way you don't have to deal with frying bacon. You know, that's always an outside job whenever possible. I mean, not at home necessarily, but when you're camping, that's so much better to be done outside. But it's also nice to just have that all ready to go. And then you just pop it out and add the rest of the ingredients and put it in the oven and have beautiful, delicious, yummy beans and meat and smokiness.
Yeah, this would be a great winter dish.
It would be a great winter dish.
It's a cowboy dish.
And, you know, I don't even mind this kind of a bean dish served cold.
That's true. Well, did I mention a pound of bacon?
And a pound of ground beef.
Yeah.
There's some good hunky, chunky meat in there.
Absolutely.
Check it out. That is linked on our website, Maryland's Cast Iron Calico Beans.
Mm-mm.
So do you have an RV to share with us this week?
I do. I was really fascinated with this. I saw an ad on good old Facebook. It was an ad for the Lance Squire. And I'm like, what in the wide, wide world of sports is the Lance Squire? So I think I've mentioned before that RV companies are starting to do what they call decontenting. During the pandemic, as they could sell anything that would roll down the assembly line, they tended to make higher priced and more content rich RVs. In other words, more fancy gadgets. Now that interest rates have gone up and RV sales have slowed down, they are focusing more on core RVs, and that comes in different forms. Some of them, Grand Design, for example, has their AIM series. Ember has their E series, which are the essentials. Camper maker Lance has come up with something they call the Squire. When I talked to the people at Lance, we came up with what this essentially is it's a Lance from about 5 years ago. So before Lance started adding things like Truma climate controls, their own suspensions, dual pane Euro style windows, Lance campers were really well-made, solid, kind of essential, for lack of a better description, campers. Well, that's just what this is. This is a five-year-old Lance 1995 that you can buy today. So no windshield, no dual pane windows, no Truma air conditioner or climate control, no Lance suspension with shock absorbers.
But still good.
It's still a Lance.
Yeah.
So it's a good, solid camper. For example, still has torsion axles, still has a 22-inch oven, still uses MaxAir fans, still uses their CNC routing to do all their cabinets and the walls and all of that. They still do wiring harnesses. So while many RV companies, the wires are just pulled by the assembly line workers based on need, Lance does, like your car company, and intentionally wires these things. All the core Lance stuff is here. It's just not as much fancy stuff. And truthfully, for a lot of owners,
you don't really need all that. Yeah.
And so this is Lance quality and features that in many cases are still better than the average travel trailer, but at a more mainstream price. And they're still building them out there in Palmdale, California.
That's right.
Lance has been building campers since the 60s. Started building travel trailers in 2008 when the economy went to heck. They still build trailers. They're still good trailers. And I would have zero qualms about recommending the Lance Squire. And for a lot of campers, it may be a better solution. There you go, Lance Squire.
Great, thank you. I know Tony has dug some of those Lance campers in the past, so.
The Lance 2075. Man, I dig that thing.
Yep. As I keep alluding to the air conditioning, we did turn it on for the first time this year, this morning, and we wanted to kind of remind you that as part of your roof maintenance, you want to make sure that the filters and the air conditioner system are free of debris so that it runs as designed. You know, go check out, make sure a bird or something didn't build a nest up in that cover over the winter.
You know, all air conditioners generate condensation. Make sure that it's all clean and clear under that shroud.
And if you didn't think to do it when you winterized and put your camper away, you might want to check those inside filters and rinse those off right quick.
Yeah, that's true.
So that is our little maintenance reminder. Last week's question of the week, we asked, when shopping for an RV, did you consider road mode?
Road mode, as our buddy Josh
says. Buddy Josh likes to call it. A lot of people said yes. Chris said they can use every part of their Class A. Jean said access to the bathroom was vital. Shannon wanted to make sure that they could get into the bathroom and kitchen. Mark said it's not just road mode, it's also load and unload mode, which is a good point. If you have to park it in a place where you can't open your slide, you need to be able to load and unload with the slide in. Connie didn't know when they shopped, but they still love their 2104S but would like to get to the fridge without having to move the slide. Eric didn't, but their 2506S does have full access to the kitchen. There were a lot of mini light answers in here. I recognized some of these these models. Mark definitely did. Kathleen did. Wayne has a Flagstaff 21FBRS, which is equivalent to a 2109S, which is just a teeny bit smaller than what we have.
Yeah, it's what same our buddy Bill has.
Same floor plan, same as Bill. Brenda said that she loves that they can just pull over and use the bathroom or fix lunch in their Class C. Janet's Keystone Passport 229RK is fully functional with the slides in. Teresa can access the bathroom, fridge, etc. in her Grand Surveyor. David said it was an important decision when choosing the 2205. Yay!
Yeah, that's one of the factors in our decision of why we
absolutely
bought this.
Is. We actually kind of picked the 2109S because we didn't want to go too big, but because we were getting that power package, and it was kind of the first generation or pre-generation of the power package, and they needed the drop frame for the extra space. And so we got the 2205 and turned out to absolutely love it.
Yeah, it still worked out really, really well.
Yeah, for sure.
This is a good floor plan.
Yeah. Jill said road mode usability is at the top of their list. Kate said it's also one of the things that sold her on the 2205. Steve said, yes, it's important to be able to get to your own personal bathroom.
Yes, it is.
Kathy said they didn't, but they love the 2506 so much that they weren't going to be hindered by not being able to access everything.
That's a fair.
So that's fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
At least you considered it. The Rockwood 2608BS has most of the kitchen accessible at the front door and the bathroom accessible from the rear door. So
that's
there you go.
A good, yeah.
Donald's able to reach all those important places. Mike said they considered it, and that's why they don't have a slide out, so they could keep it simple. Russ said bathroom access is required. Brian said they knew what they were getting into and they realized the limitations, like limited road mode, but they would buy it again. Tammy said, definitely, I wouldn't have a fifth wheel without access. Marilyn said, nope, but we can access the bathroom and kitchen without moving the slides, which is, you know, that's two-thirds of the battle, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Bill said 100%. He had actually considered a very expensive brand of slideless trailer.
I wonder if those are made out of aluminum.
But they searched around and found the 2109S, and he travels alone now so he can keep the slide in if he spends a night on the road. Because one of the only limitations really with the 2109 and the 2205 is one side of the bed is blocked from the slide. But if you get in on the other side, you're all good.
Yep.
Tom said they really considered road accessibility when they were choosing between the 2109 and the 2104. And Monica said, I made this mistake 23 years ago with our little 25-foot fifth wheel. Couldn't get in the bathroom or the fridge. So now they pay more attention when they are shopping.
Makes sense to me. Of course, you know my favorite. I would love a trailer without a slide.
Yeah, I know. Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Next question of the week is, what's your favorite two-lane road? I guess you know how I came up with that question.
Gee, I can't imagine.
Do you take the time to slow down and enjoy the scenery?
Nick really is an inspiration.
Yes.
On looking at these great two-lane roads. Is this something you do? Do you look for these two-lane roads? Do you like to stop at the local cafe or things like that?
And when you tell us your favorite two-lane roads, I'm going to add more. I might have to change the name then. In my trip wizard, if I call one Nick's Trips and then a lot of you give me other two-lane roads, I might have to call it, I don't know, Stressless Campers Trips or something.
Ooh, but yeah.
Two-lane trips. So as you probably already know, you can answer that question of the week. Any question of the week, you can ask your own questions. You can post pictures of your campouts at our fun and friendly Stressless Campers Facebook group.
Yeah, and did you know we do a once-a-week newsletter that's completely free with links to the stories, videos, and podcasts that will help you get the most out of your RV experience? And we have started sneakily dropping some of your names in to win a prize. That is, just keep an eye, read the whole newsletter,
read the whole newsletter.
If you see your name, reply. We have stuff for you.
I remember a newsletter that we used to get that would intentionally put a misspelling in there. And if you replied to them and told them where the misspelling was, you got maybe entered into a drawing or something. Huh, that was fun too.
I like that idea. Well,
maybe
anyway,
if it gets too easy to find your name, we'll make it a little harder by that sort of an Easter egg, since it's Easter.
Ooh, there you go. And no, of course, we only send one email a week. Period. End of story.
You also can find the show notes for episode
249
on the podcast page at stresslesscamping.com.
Hey, that's also where I think there are these discounts and deals for the best deals on the things you'll need for your stressless camping adventure, including RV Trip Wizard. We got 25% off there and
so many discounts and deals.
Yeah, there are a lot of great things.
And if you know of a deal that we don't have, please reach out and let us know. We love to have that page full of good discounts.
Absolutely. And did you know you can reach out on any of the social places that you might find yourself? You can also start at stresslesscamping.com and find where we're being social out there.
Just jump off from the website onto all those little icons that are up in the top of the page.
Yep.
And also, if you don't want to miss a future episode of the Stressless Camping Podcast,
it's free.
It's free to subscribe on any podcast catcher, and we are saving you a seat around our virtual air conditioner.
Of course, you know, a review will help others find this podcast, and the more listeners we have, the more we can continue to get these great guests, including New York Times best-selling authors and just some really neat people. So thank you for sharing reviews, all of that. It truly does make a big difference, and we appreciate it.
It does. And one quick reminder that if you like to share but you're not really sure, our newsletter has full instructions, and so does our website. So
yep.
Check it out and share, share, share.
Sharing is caring.
That's right.
Well, we are caring about you. We appreciate you putting us in your ears week after week. It just blows my mind how many people out there have chosen to join our little virtual campfire here. So thank you, one and all. Every one of you means a lot to us. And most of all,
stressless camping.
We hope you learned a lot and had some fun and got some tips for your next stress-less camping adventure. We're honored by your reviews on Apple Podcasts, which helps others find us too. Don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss out on the adventure, and we look forward to your joining us next week. Until then, happy camping!